allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Again, welcome everybody. First on the agenda is roll call, and Mark Snyder and Charles both called in and said they would not make it tonight. So I do hear a motion to excuse Mark tonight from the meeting. And Kayla first. Dan seconded. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay, do I hear a motion to excuse Charles Garcia tonight?
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it. Dan first, Ken Johnson second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay, and that, both of them will be excused tonight. Okay, current business 2.01, public hearing, revenue sources, including property taxes, Spencer Williams. Please bear with us as we progress through the legal and technical aspect of the public hearing. This public hearing is now open at 7.02 p.m. and is being held to receive a staff report and receive public comments on the revenue sources for the 2014 budget. This public hearing is required by state law. I will now ask staff to report. Spencer?
Thank you very much, Mayor and Council. We're just starting our budget season for 2014, which is always an exciting time of year. Everyone looks forward to that, I think. Part of the budget is obviously looking at the revenues that we have at our disposal to build into the expenses and the processes and programs and services that we want to build into the next year's budget. I've built a chart here that goes through the revenues for the major funds of the city that we can talk through a little bit, and if you have some questions, we can talk through those questions. First of all, the very first column there is with the general fund, and we have a beginning fund balance of $598,000. That's better than what we thought we'd end up 2013 with. Through our budgeting process, we thought we'd end up with $504,000. So just right out of the box, if we begin the year with another $94,000 than we had planned, then that's great. It's fantastic. It's really a testament to the city departments working hard to cut costs where we can cut costs and to be mindful of the city budget. We have the next item right under the general fund are the taxes in the general fund. It's $2.2 million right here. The largest portion of that is from property taxes, and it's about $1.5 million of got to change pointers here. About $1.5 million of this 2.2 is from the property tax that we receive every year. And we don't have the official numbers from the county yet. I should be getting those here later in this month or early next month. So to get that revenue, I look at what we've been receiving the last couple of years, and I build in the same escalator that we've seen over the last couple of years. When we look at the revenues, there's kind of a tricky balance between wanting to be optimistic and wanting to be realistic. We want to look at the revenues, or we want to show the revenues to be as large as we can, so that we can use those funds for the betterment of the city. But at the same time, we don't want to overshoot what we think we're going to have, because then we get into a position where we're halfway through the year and we realize all the revenues that we thought we were going to be bringing in aren't actually coming in. So with the revenues that I've projected here, I've taken the conservative approach that the city has taken towards this process in the last few years. So, the next fund here is the street fund. The largest revenue into the street fund are from the retail sales tax, and that's this $640,000 here. We estimate we'll receive about $1.2 million in retail sales tax, and that number gets split 50-50 between the general fund and the street fund. So we've already built that split into our revenue estimates for these two funds. ones here. We have a couple other. We have our water, sewer, and solid waste funds. Tourism. The tourism fund, that's the first of our restricted revenues that we can discuss tonight. These are funds that we collect. It's the lodging tax that we collect, and we collect this tax with a very specific purpose. It's for the organizations that promote tourism within our community. And so you can see, we estimate we'll be starting the year with $35,000. And at the bottom, you can see $74,000. The council likes to reserve about $40,000 of that for things that might come up during the year. So when we meet with different tourism organizations and get their applications for funding from this source, we'll start with $40,000 less than the total resources here, so $34,559. Our next item is the REIT funds. That's another restricted revenue. We're allowed to collect it under state law, but it has to be used for a very specific purpose. The RCWs stipulate specific things that it can be used for. So we anticipate ending the year with $83,000, or having at least $83,000 at our disposal to use during the budgeting process. And then our utility tax fund. With our utility tax fund, I estimate we'll receive $1.2 million in revenues. And this is another one of those funds that we split with the general fund, 50-50 per Othello Municipal Code. Then the remainder of the funds that are left in that, the remainder of the dollars left in that fund are for capital projects of $25,000 or more. With our utility tax fund, this is the fund where we had the natural gas tax that we had to repay to the Department of Revenue this year. There was $137,000 once all is said and done. We split that repayment over the 11 months of the year from February to December. That's about $12,500 per month that they reduced our monthly allotment by, so we can be chipping away at that amount that had to be paid back. And so that's done. I received an email today from the Department of Revenue where they stated that with our December allotment, it was slightly less than $12,500, just to shore everything up. But with the month of December, we're done with that repayment. So next year in January, we're starting the year with a clean slate. So that's an exciting thing there with utility taxes. Other than that, are there any questions specific to the revenues that we're anticipating?
Oh, Spencer, thank you. Yeah. So now we'll do it. Yeah. Anything else?
That's it.
Okay. I will now ask for public testimony. Questions or objections to be heard from citizens. Please raise your hand so I may recognize you. After I acknowledge you, please stand and state your name and address for the record in the microphone over here. I'll allow up to 5 minutes. Okay, since there's no public comments, I will now close the time for public testimony. Okay. Do any council members have comments or questions at this time? No? Okay. And I will now close the public hearing at 7:09 p.m. Thank you, Spencer. Okay. Next on the agenda is information questions for lobbyist Scott Cave. There you are.
I'm going to start by passing out a letter that I received from Commissioner Bill Schlegel. He provided this to Mayor Wilson, I think, on Friday. I got a copy of it that Friday, and then I met with Alan Floyd, and you'll see at the bottom of the letter, Alan Floyd signed his name as well. It's a letter in support of my application to be your lobbyist. The reason reason I brought that in is I thought it was somewhat important that you be aware that I do have a lot of support in this community. I've been involved in Adams County for over 23 years. I've been a resident and a voter for that period of time. I participated with a number of local citizens on a variety of issues. I subscribed to the Othello Outlook for 23 years. That in itself is a benefit, I am sure. So I'm aware of what's going on in your community, and I'm anxious to be a part of your team going forward. I want to back up a little bit and talk about the funding issue. I think there was a miscommunication between me and staff on what that amount is. I had talked to council on August 5th at your workshop, and then I followed up with a meeting with the mayor and council member Kaler on August 23rd, and we discussed a budget scenario and some of the various likely things that I would be working on, and we came to the conclusion that the budget would be about $5,000 to $6,000 a month on average. In my correspondence with the council or with the staff, I alluded to the fact that during session that number goes up significantly and then will likely drop in other months of the year, and it's all based on your need and those various projects that we're working on, and it's also dictated by the city budget. You can determine how much time you want to spend pushing me around the hill, if you will, and making me do tasks for you. That's your decision, so I would sincerely ask the council to re-examine the budget issue at a lower level, $5,000 to $6,000 a month, because I think that's logically what's going to happen, and consider me for your lobbyist. Since I met with the mayor, just in the last month, I've been at a couple of meetings that I wanted to relay. On the 28th of August, I attended the State Department of Commerce's Public Works Board and Curb Workshop down in Yakima. On September 8th and 9th, I attended a legislative transportation tour over in Grant County at three different ports. September 16th, I was at the Ecology Water Resources Advisory Committee meeting in Olympia. And just last week, on the 27th of September, I attended the Washington Water Utility Council's meeting in Spokane. I also was on Ecology's water resources tour for the Columbia River Policy Advisory Group, which happened on the 17th and 18th of September. All of those meetings have relevance for Othello, because those meetings all deal with issues that are in front of you beyond one or two small projects. The big issues, really, from my perspective looking at Othello, is that you have industrial and transportation infrastructure needs, but you also have water supply and water quantity issues that are continuing to come up. And you have a natural gas supply limitation here. And combined, those things are affecting your economic development and your ability to grow as a community. I'm an economist by trade, so I kind of look at things from an economic development perspective. And I can see that, really, you're in a position now where, given what the legislature did in the last budget cycle, you're a little bit behind the eight ball on some of your projects. And I think I'm in a position to help you move those forward in a timely fashion. There is federal and state funding available, and those sources, though, have opened up now. The federal fiscal year just started October 1st, so there is a funding cycle right now for federal grants and loans that you are capable of applying for and being a competitor in, but you need to get your applications in, and you need to be thoughtful about what that application says. It's very competitive. Only about 20% of the Transportation Improvement Board projects get funded. So you can get in the queue and get, you know, on the list, but you may not get funded. So it makes it all the more important that you really are conscientious and you work with your consultants to devise the best competitive application you possibly can, and I can help you with that process. The other, I think I would add that I have had some meetings recently with some legislators and have broached the subject of what happened with the Public Works Trust Fund and Othello's situation in particular. And I know there's legislation afoot to redress the Public Works Trust Fund sweep that occurred. And I'm participating with groups, those ones I identified, the Washington Water Utility Council, Washington Resource Advisory Committee, or the Water Resources Advisory Committee, to find ways that we can provide infrastructure funding in the future for communities like Othello. So I guess I feel like we're a really good mix because of my history and background, my residency in the area, which I'm very familiar with your issues. I've worked in the legislature now for about 15 years. The last five, I've been the lobbyist for the city of Quincy, so I'm familiar with some of the policy issues that are before cities as well, and they've been issues for your community. So I really feel like I'm in a position to help you determine your legislative strategy and help you succeed in achieving that over the next couple of years. I'd be happy to answer any questions or...
Questions from council?
I got one, Scott. There's been a rumor about having a possible special session before the end of the year. Have you heard any update on that?
Yeah, and you probably noticed that in just the last couple of weeks, there was transportation hearings all across the state where citizens were coming in and giving information and advice to the legislature about what's happening with the transportation package. There's support for a package to come forward, but the specific components of that package and what it looks like and who pays the bill is still widely debated. So my gut is I don't know if the governor is going to want to call a session unless he feels like he can get a deal passed, unless he can get something actually achieved. And I know there's discussions that are going on, but at this point I'm not overly optimistic that there's going to be a special session. Actually, there could be, but it's a little up in the air.
So can we like hire you for like a 6-month period at a time, or do you like to run on a yearly contract, or?
You could do that. I would argue that you're better off to look at it as a long-term investment. What happens typically in this process is that you put forward your requests for applications, you engage with the legislature on policy issues, and you become more of a player in that community. Because right now you're not. And so you need to, you know, get a presence in Olympia, basically, and in Washington, D.C. to some degree. And I can help you with that. But it's not a short-term process. It's usually a more long-term process. Like I mentioned, the funding for a lot of projects has slowed down. It's become more competitive. And so you might have to be in an application process for a couple of years before you actually succeed and get to the top of the list and get funded. Given that, the nature of that business, that's why I like to establish long-term relationships and bring you to Olympia. See, the other side of this is that having me over there is a benefit for you, certainly, but I need you to come to Olympia. And I'm going to ask you to come to Olympia on specific tasks and to meet with some people in order to advance your agenda, but also to get you funding. I've taken people to D.C. before as well. Sometimes that's where you have to go to make the rounds to get your issue in front of people and have them understand the value of it and to support it. So yeah, it could be a shorter cycle. Again, I would encourage a more long-term strategy in order to succeed. Your legislative agenda, which we haven't really devised yet, but when that is devised and you determine what it looks like, you're going to recognize that it's going to be a lengthy process. For instance, the Public Records Act was, again, debated this year, and there was a bill put forward to make changes to that, and those changes would have been significant for your city. However, that bill ran into a boatload of opposition and died. That bill is likely, or a variation of it, to come back. And if it doesn't get passed next year, it might be the following year. So in the legislature, you know, there's an old saying, you know, no bills ever die, because they get recycled, and they get rewritten, and they get brought back if there's support for them. I was just bringing that up as an example because I think it's an issue that's probably near and dear to your heart here a little bit, and I know it's going to come back on the burner again. And it's not that anybody's trying to change the law so that there isn't the ability to have a public records request. In fact, I think, if anything, you know, we want to see more transparency. We want to have websites that allow the citizens to access all that community information that their city council is dealing with so that they can be informed. Well, that's a benefit to everybody. So it's not a matter of limiting that. It's more or less trying to eliminate those really harsh records requests that can basically bankrupt a city. And there's a couple of communities in our state that have faced some difficult times because of public records requests. So it's just the abnormal case that they're really trying to prevent. But anyway, that legislation wasn't able to get passed, so it'll likely be back. And that's what, you know, we do as lobbyists is we continue to fight these battles for our clients and, you know, try to prevail.
How many cities at a time do you deal with?
Well,
and
there
what's
are,
your cap?
Yeah, there are lobbyists that have 5 or 6 cities. I have 2. I mean, that's my maximum is 2. And the reason for that is in part because usually the cities I work with have a variety of tasks that they need to have accomplished, and I don't feel comfortable taking on too much. I'd rather fall on the other side than take on too much and feel like I'm not doing the right, a good enough job for my client. So I stick to two.
Other questions from council?
One more clarification here. It's my understanding with this contract, it's more or less a wide open contract as far as how much we demand of you is basically what the fee would be. In other words, you work X number of hours, that's what the fee will be. It's nothing that's, you know, set so much a month or based on anything for the year period or anything. I realize it'll be an up and down situation where you've got, you know, you're on a specific project and those dollars would be more. In other words, you'd be spending more time. So it, to me, looks like a pretty open contract as far as what we demand of you, and that's what our fee would be.
Yeah,
and your fee would be to us.
To Councilman Bain's comment, too, there are a lot of lobbyists who have just set retainer amounts, so it's just a set dollar amount every month, regardless of what they do year-round, 12 months. I found that, you know, the clients I work with are oftentimes smaller cities, smaller communities, people with tighter budgets, if you will, and they want to have more control. And you have more control when you work on an hourly because you can say, look, you know, we're going to set you up to do these things for us, and then as time goes on, as you start to, you know, get those bills in and you start to recognize what you're being, what's being accomplished, you can make determinations about how you want to cut or go forward on things. Now, there may be policy issues that are really significant to you that you really want to fight on. Well, that's going to take some of my time to do, and it's going to take you to come to Olympia to go fight those battles as well. But that's a conversation that we need to have as this relationship matures.
Thank you, Scott. We appreciate you driving down.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Okay. 2.03, presentation by Jennifer Ziegler, lobbyist.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Ziegler. I know that you have my resume and a proposal from me. You'll notice, and we can talk about this a little bit more during the questions, that the proposal is pretty targeted, focused on what I understand your transportation needs to be, specifically based on the lack of the Public Works Trust Fund money and some of the opportunities that might be coming up over the next several months to try to find a way to replace some of that funding outside of the Public Works Trust Fund conversation. So let me just do a couple things for you today. First, I'll tell you a little bit about myself. Then I want to just give you a summary of some of the legislative conversations that have been underway right now and are starting to progress, especially in the area of transportation revenue, and then outline a couple of the things for 2014 that I would consider to be to-do items if you wanted to have that sort of focused legislative agenda. So just a little bit of background about me. I'm originally from Kansas. I moved out to Washington to go to law school. And during law school, started working for the Washington State Senate, and the joke is I sort of stayed and never left. I stayed there, moved from education funding issues to transportation, and for a period of time, it used to be, now this was really a long time ago, that that transportation was jointly staffed, so when you worked for transportation, you worked for both the House and the Senate. So I did that for a few years and then ended up moving over to the State Transportation Commission at the time where the commission actually still selected the Secretary of Transportation. So that was before the governor actually made that decision. I shifted from there to be the Government Relations Director for the Department of Transportation and then most recently Governor Gregoire's Transportation Policy Advisor. So at the end of Governor Gregoire's term, it was a really great opportunity for me to pause and decide what I wanted to do next. And I knew that legislative work really mattered to me and that I love transportation issues. So that's when I started the contract lobbying business. So I'm very new to the contract lobbying arena, but have a number of long-term relationships. And I think, you know, the bad thing about the resume might be there are a lot of jobs on there, but the good thing about the resume is that there's a lot of jobs on there too. I've had the chance to see legislative interactions from the staff side, from the agency side, and from the governor's side. And the last thing I want to do on just a little bit about me is tell you the clients that I have now. So I have the City of Cheney under contract. I just signed a contract with them starting in September, again, for a targeted focused transportation effort. So it's a six-month contract for them through the end of March to see if we can get funding for one of the projects that they care about if there is a transportation revenue package. The other city that I have is City of Lake Stevens, and I represent them jointly with another lobbyist. So he does sort of the bigger side, the other side of issues, and I focus on transportation for them. And then the last thing I'll just mention is then I have two private sector clients. I have a firm called HNTV Engineering, again, cares very much about transportation, and I have Nichols Brothers Boat Builders. So they are a long-term family business with the island, and they build ferries and they build catamarans and other vessels. So for them, I do a little bit more than transportation. I do some work on permitting and some labor issues as well. So let's talk just for a minute about legislative conversations. You may have noticed that the revenue forecast was actually up most recently, and so folks started to talk about that and wonder whether that meant there was an opportunity to talk with legislators about Public Works Trust Fund money actually being put back into the Public Works Trust Fund. The Ways and Means and Appropriations chairs actually sent out a letter pretty quickly saying don't go spending that money just yet. We're gonna need to look at the upcoming budget situation, and we still have that pretty significant education funding obligation. So the one place, and as you know, for the Public Works Trust Fund, there are two issues. One is they took away the money from all the pending projects, but then they also diverted the revenue over 6 years. So the other place where there have been some conversations is some interest by, in particular, capital budget members in limiting that diversion of revenue to 2 years instead of six. So as you think about your upcoming legislative agenda, if that legislation starts to move, that might be a place that you might want to consider being supportive. I think generally speaking, I'm not terribly optimistic about that Public Works Trust Fund money being restored in the supplemental session. If it happens, I think it's probably a longer term issue. So I want to shift just to transportation specifically, and I'll give you just a little bit of background on the transportation proposal, and so bear with me if you already know all the details. But during the last legislative session, the House actually introduced a proposal. It was a 10-cent gas tax increase that generated about $10 billion. There were some other fees in there too, but that was the bulk of the funding, and provided funding over a 10-year period of time. They did take a penny of that and do an increase in the direct distribution to cities and counties, so split between cities and counties and then distributed based on population. The other thing that they did is they increased the amount of funding that went to some of the local grant agencies, so like CRAB and the Transportation Improvement Board. So that was the proposal the legislature had in front of them that the House passed and then the Senate chose to not act on at the end of the legislative session. So the Senate said, look, we had way too many things to deal with on the general fund side, but we do want to talk about transportation. So that's when they started to do the listening sessions that you already heard a little bit about. I've been to about half of them so far, most recently in Spokane last week. I'll tell you that generally speaking, folks are relatively supportive about funding transportation. I'll say, particularly in Spokane, they didn't like the gas tax much at all. The other thing, though, that's part of that conversation is legislators are really focused on reform of the system. So I'll give you an example. Right now, when you pay sales tax on construction, it goes to the general fund. It doesn't go back to the transportation fund. So that's one of the big ones that they're focused on trying to change. Some changes in prevailing wage, changes in permitting. So there's a big conversation about what are the things that you could do to save money for transportation projects, and let's pass some of those bills before we hike the gas tax up. And so folks thought in August, I think when this conversation started, that a November special session might be realistic. I know that the two transportation chairs started meeting with the governor's office last week, and I'll tell you that passing the right set of reform bills and getting an agreement on funding and projects is a pretty big lift to happen between now and the end of November. And so I'll say to you what I've said to a couple other folks. You really have to decide if it happens, there won't be another transportation package for 10 years. So you hate to not be part of the conversation, but the likelihood of it happening in November or happening in 2014, which is an election year, is, you know, it's a tough lift to actually occur. So there's a huge effort to push it. In particular, the sort of bigger state business community very much has said to legislators, we want this and it matters to us. You would not be surprised to hear that the testimony in Everett was all about Boeing and their upcoming decision. But, you know, it's hard to make a bet on whether it actually is going to happen or not. So the last thing I want to do is just talk to you a little bit about 2014. So if there's not a November special session, what are the things in 2014 legislatively and agency-wise that could happen to help with that funding that you lost? I'll say that one thing is definitely to be engaged in any Association of Washington City efforts to educate legislators about the Public Works Trust Fund, to try to work to restore funding in the future, to push for the diversion of that revenue to be for a shorter period of time, and then really to work closely with those places that do have some money to give out grants. So just like you heard about the Transportation Improvement Board, the Department of Commerce, highways and local programs of the State Department of Transportation, all of those are places where, you know, sometimes you can get bits and pieces and patch it together enough to end up having enough for a project. So that's my view of the legislative outlook. I'm happy to answer any questions about what I see coming up legislatively or about the specific proposal.
Just comment. I think you're right on this as far as 2014. I think we've got to look ahead. I think we've got to look at 2015, because what they do and what will happen, it isn't going to anything going to happen for 2015. They've already changed the name of this. It is no longer the Public Works Trust Fund. It's what do they call it, the Assistance Account or whatever they call that now. So they're trying to weasel out of that directly. And that's something we've got to educate the legislators of what's going on.
And I will tell you, I know from the conversations I've been part of, they're not just hearing that from, I mean, they're definitely hearing it from their local communities, but they're also hearing it from engineering firms. They're hearing it from contractors. I mean, the sort of ripple effects of the loss of those projects is likely to be more significant than people expected.
Yeah, it's like AWC, you know, they can help as a lobbyist and whatnot, but they still need the input from the cities to be able to make it effective. They can't do it for each individual city. They've got to do it as a combined group, and we need to do it from the individual side as far as cities are concerned.
Any other comments? Okay.
Thanks, Jennifer, for the time.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming over. And Scott, we appreciate both of you, because I know you had to drive and be away from your families, and you know, we appreciate you coming doing the presentation. I'm sure we'll be talking about this next Monday. And we'll get back to you. Thank you again. 2.04, the 2014 Mid-Valley Swim League Championships, hosted by the Othello Barracuda Swim Team, to be held here in Othello at the Othello Community Pool. Cool. Molly.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Before we get started, I just wanted to apologize. There is an error at the top of the page that says action required. This is actually just an informational presentation, so I wanted to address that. Apologize. But today we're here because the Othello Barracudas are a member team of the Mid-Valley Swim League, and they are an annual contracted user of the Othello Community Pool. And they've been yearly participants in the Mid-Valley Swim League Championship Meet since 2009. This championship meet is a three-day meet that draws over 600 swimmers and their families to each participating team or host team's facility each year. And in 2014, the Othello Barracudas and their representatives would like to host this meet here at the Othello Community Pool. And Dulcie Field, meet director and representative of the Othello Barracuda swim team, is here to present the event to council and to inform you guys on what the event entails, what we can expect if council approves the hosting of this event, and much more. So, following her presentation, we'll welcome any questions that council may have regarding this event. So, without further ado, I'll let Dulcie take the floor.
Thank you for having us here tonight. I have with me Rob Simmons, fellow swim team parent. We're both involved in the planning of the Champs event. Which is upcoming. I know you're thinking it's October, how can we be thinking about swimming? And but it takes a lot to plan Champs. As Molly mentioned, it's a very big event. This was last season's Champs team, or Barracudas team, a smaller representation than in years past, but we're still very proud of our swimmers. They compete against some teams in the league that are much, much larger. And so it's amazing to see the swimmers go and compete, and they just are out there for themselves and to do better for themselves each swim time. So a little bit of background. We have been competing within the Mid-Valley Swim League just recently since 2009. We've actually taken home the Sportsmanship Award 2 years in a row, 2011 and 2012. The swim season always begins in very early June. Often school is still going in session, and so they go after school, and then they start once school's done, they start to swim in the mornings for 2 hours every morning. It concludes in July with Champs, so it's about an eight-week program. League teams alternate hosting the Champs at each facility every year. Last year was held in Sela. The year before that was held in Etchings. And then 2014 is scheduled to be here in Othello. And our kids are really, really excited about this. They cannot wait. So it's also a great opportunity for the city that's hosting it. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. Something to expect, it's between 500 and 600 swimmers competing and their families. So if I've got one kid that's swimming, I might have two kids that I've got bringing with me as well. Not to mention grandma, grandpa, other spectators that might come. They come from Sunnyside, Grandview, Toppenish, Natchez, Sela, and Prosser. We are one of the smaller teams within the league, as I mentioned, and we have one of the smaller pools as well. And that's another reason that we are planning so early in the year, is because, one, how do you get 600 kids cycled through our pool to do all of their events? That's part of the planning that we'll have to undertake as well. We're anticipating the swimmers and their families will spend the day in Lions Park as they await their events. We'll have to set up loudspeakers and that type of thing so that we can call events. There's probably 70 events in one day, multiple heats in each event. And as Molly mentioned, it starts on Friday night and goes all the way through Sunday. So it's a big deal. The pool deck will be very, very busy. Lots and lots of people to run this event. There are three timers for every lane, swim lane. There are also people announcing the events. There's officials on the pool deck at all times. Volunteers taking care of all the timers, taking care of the kids. So it's an extraordinarily big event. Just to give you a little perspective, I snagged some pictures off of the Barracudas Facebook page. give you an idea of a little bit about what the park looks like. All the pop-up tents in the background, those are kids just hanging out, waiting for their events to be called. Of course, there are some shenanigans that happen between events as well, as you can tell. Lots of eating and lots of socializing. The kids just have a really fantastic time, a lot of bonding, and they get to know people within their communities as well. I know a lot of kids I probably wouldn't have met otherwise if we hadn't been involved in the swim team. So this, again, a little bit about what the park might look like, and this is just our very small team. Toppenish, for example, they'll bring, I don't know, 20 or 30 pop-ups, and they'll have lots and lots of kids just everywhere. So lots of fun. This picture I selected because this was held at Natchez, and in the very background, you can tell this is one of the other small pools in the league. It's the same size as ours, but it has two additional lanes. And so what Natchez had to do to accommodate seating at their pool was that background, that hill in the background, they cut out notches in the hill, and they actually laid sod for people to go and put their lawn chairs up there. You see the beautiful lawn chairs back in the back. But just to accommodate all of the seating, something that they did. This is just a shot of the kids. Before the event begins on Saturday, they do a big, all the kids come in and do a parade of teams. It's a lot of fun, but the pool is just lined sometimes three or four deep with kids along the sides. Again, this is in Natchez where the pool is very small, and this is just our little bitty team. So, a couple of reasons that we're really excited to offer this to the city of Othello. We want to have it here because we think our businesses would gain, of course. There's some lodging, of course, and here in town we would anticipate people would want to stay at our local hotels. Many families like to camp, and we're going to talk a little bit about that as a concern later too. A lot of people bring RVs, and so they're fine with camping without hookups. Some suggestions that have been made to us is, how about the fairgrounds? Maybe they could camp out there if they wanted power, or even if they didn't, they could use some of the non-powered hookups out there. There's also been suggestions about alongside the streets. There have been questions about whether or not we could camp within the park. So those are all things that we've had discussion about. Food vendors, of course. At the other champs that I've been to, the local vendors will actually bring the food to the pool. So you might see local food trucks there. You might see one of the pizza joints bring something to serve there as well. So they can, of course, and they'll benefit at the end of the day when people go out to dinner at the end of the day to just regroup. And then people always forget things, so supplies, Walmart, I'm sure, would gain. We'd want to tell them to stock up on lawn chairs and those types of things that people always forget. Things that we need, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Molly. She's done a lot of work working with me on this. She's put together some maps for us, and she's helped facilitate this. So she's been a great big help, and I'd really like to thank her on behalf of the team for that. She did not tell me to say that either. but some of the things, like I said, have already been taken care of via contract or other communications. Use of the pool from Friday through Saturday, or through Sunday, actually. Use of Lions Park from Friday through Sunday as well. We've talked to her about parking concerns, and they've talked to us, the city's talked to us about what we might be able to do as far as parking is concerned. It's just a lot of people to try to cram into that small area. I've got a map here in a second. We've also talked with the city about expanded seating. We don't have a lot of options in that arena just because of the area of the pool is very small, but they've offered to help where they can with that. Other items of concern, we have some real safety issues that we need to address before this happens. One of them is we have backstroke flags that are required for all meets. Currently, the backstroke flags are anchored in big blocks of concrete that we have kids carrying around, which they're at least 60 pounds. They're very heavy. That's something that we'd like to address and fix. We've talked a little bit about some options for that. One of the ideas was denied due to structural concerns for the pool. We'd asked for some holes to be drilled to just, you know, put the poles in, and there were some concerns about the integrity of the deck for that. But we'd like to explore other options if that's not on the table. It's just, we just can't have the kids carrying those things around, plus they're a trip hazard as well. So safety, of course, being the utmost concern for us. That many people in that area, we just want to make it as safe as possible. Stability of our starting blocks, that's also another concern. It's kind of along the same lines. We have had some complaints off and on just in regular meets about rocking of those blocks, and so we need to look at options for anchoring those as well. And then the lodging issue for visitors, we just are open for suggestions or other options. We've done some investigation. The Best Western's got only 60 rooms, and I don't know how many, but it was 50 or something along those lines. It's not 600 or even close. And that is also the weekend of Relay. So that's just more people. Before we even left CELA, there were people that were saying, towns approached us and said, you know, if you guys don't want to have it in Othello, come back to Sunnyside, come to Totteridge, you guys can have it here. And Natchez said, we'll do it again. So because they just recognize that it brings in dollars to the community, it's a source of pride. Our kids, like I mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, they're dying to have it here. They want to show off their town. So that's another reason to consider. Molly was nice enough again to mock up some of the ideas that we had. You can see the map is small, I apologize, but there you can see the orange is just day parking. We talked about other parking options. There's some church areas as well. We are talking about blocking off the standard pool parking area and just having that available for vendors. Again, with safety in mind, trying to limit the access, the driving access to the pool. And then we're anticipating that if nothing else for day camping, we're going to need all the gazebos and that purple area that's outlined there in the park. There's a lot of waiting around. Kids do about 3 events a day. And so there's a lot of heaps in between where they're hanging out and killing time. Any questions?
I'd like to say thank you for all the work that you guys have put into this, and all the parents and all the volunteers have been involved, because I know that's a lot of work. I've gone to a couple of your meets in Washington. How do they keep track of everybody? You know, it's pretty impressive watching that whole swim meet go by. That's pretty neat. I'm sure the council was favorable towards this just by looking at their faces. I think probably what we'll do is probably put together a council committee along with staff and have a meeting, sit down, see what we can do to make this happen. So, you know, but Monday we'll bring it back to council to get the official, you know, approval, hopefully. So I believe that's what will happen. So any other comments from council?
No, I think this is, like I said, this is a great project, and it's a lot of ambition to take it on. And we're talking 2,500 people or more for the weekend, and that's great. Because those, once we get those dollars in town, they circulate 4 or 5 times.
Well, we're really excited about it.
How many RV parking areas would you need? I mean, what's your feel for that?
Well, that's a great question. There was a lot more need for RVs in Natchez because they didn't have a lot of them like us.
Right.
A lot of people
right.
Got to Yakima to stay there. This year in CELA, it was a little different. They had more lodging options. And so, find out. We probably get a hold of Natchez and ask them how many campers they have. But I would just offer
if the RV is the only thing you brought, you'd be packing it back and forth.
Right.
Okay.
That's good.
A lot of the options are there as far as parking goes. One thing I need to talk about is, I wonder if the school would allow me parking Hiawatha, but then after I look at it, that portal is so close to the entrance, I don't think you'd be able to turn RV to get into that area, maybe if it wasn't so I don't know if that's good, that option. That's, I think that's our biggest challenge, really. That would eventually get this one easier now, and see how, like, that's a well-known change. You can see if the main one can be here, it's unreal how quickly those get recycled through and how well that is. So it takes me a while to work that through the park.
Well, there's options out there, you know, we can close the street off. You know, that might be an option, I don't know.
Haven't we allowed RVs to camp over on that, in that big parking area over for baseball tournaments?
Yes, we've had for baseball tournaments.
I was going to say, we've done that before, and it's a possibility too.
Is this then what the council committee would talk about, these kind of options?
And then bring it back to council for discussion.
Yeah, I mean, along those lines, if we are the furthest, you saw the names of the cities on the slideshow. We're the furthest, and so it's not reasonable to think that they would go back and forth like they might if they were to go down.
Yeah, a lot of it, so we're talking about Sela, Sunnyside, Natchez, several places, but most of them are pretty much home, because, yeah, if I have an hour drive, they can still go home.
Any other comments?
Doesn't the migrant daycare has a fair-sized parking lot over there by the Christian church that it is not used that extensively, I think, over the weekend? And I have seen...
only on Friday.
Pardon?
It starts on Friday afternoon, Friday.
So, but that parking lot's never full, so I think they should have some room. I've seen they use the bus loop there at... I think when Charles had his thing, there was five campers in a bus loop right across the street there. And
always fill up Walmart's parking lot. They welcome campers and whatnot. So.
Not so much anymore.
I think you're cutting
out overnight. That's what I heard.
Well, again, thank you very much for your willingness to do this. This is great. Thank you. Okay, next on the agenda is committee reports. I want to thank all the council members and staff. We've had quite a few already, four or five, I believe. We have another five in the next 3 days, so appreciate you coming and being there. Is there any reports from any of the committees?
Just for the Adams County Development Council, we're currently still working on getting Adams County designated as a federal trade zone, and we've also recently formed a railroad committee, and we will be meeting with Senator Patty Murray's aide next week to go over railroad transportation needs in the Adams County area.
Good. Okay. Any other committee reports?
As you know, we're in the budget cycle. We've had several committees and whatnot. I'm not going to go into each one individually, but I think we've had some pretty good discussion. I think we've come up with some pretty good ideas and thoughts for our 2014 budget. A few of us did go down to Richland last Thursday to an AWC conference. It was quite interesting. Basically the same thing our two possible lobbyists were talking about. They talked about a lot the same thing of what's happened with our public trust fund and where that money is and what's happened to it. Same thing as our representatives told us. But I think there's some light at the end of the tunnel. I think if each city keeps pushing, putting a lot of pressure on legislature, I think they're going to turn some of that around and hopefully loosen up on some of that money. A few other things they talked about briefly was like our marijuana. That's another revenue that's going to come up. They're thinking about taxing that pretty heavily as far as recreational marijuana. The only problem is the state's looking at it to have it go directly to the general fund. But I think us as cities, we need to push and keep the issue that, hey, you know, our local law enforcement is the ones that's going to have to bite the bullet to support this and keep control of it, where the general budget from the legislature is not going to do a thing. So some of that money should trickle back down to us as local cities and whatnot to work on that particular situation when it comes to marijuana. There were several other issues. I'll let Tim or Gina was there. She can probably.
Yeah, you covered it good.
One of the other issues that they're really pushing on is the alcoholic tax that was out there, the alcohol. The state has totally removed that from the cities now. That's money that we lost as a community. They're going to push hard again to get that reversed and sent back to the communities where it should have been. So the state has taken that and used it to balance their budget. That's one of the funds that we had lost. So that was one of the other focuses that they're going after also this next year.
I believe our share of that was pretty close to $50,000, wasn't it?
Yep. Remember right. Anything else from you guys? I know there's two other items. I don't remember what they were, but. Okay.
One other thing, the AWC is looking at what is the future of Washington State. And they're talking about in the next 10 years, we would probably increase in population about, 760,000, which is the equivalent of another city the size of Seattle and Bellevue combined. So that's going to make your cities all grow larger. They're all going to have to support that many more people. And it looks like the trend, the way it's been in the last 25 years, it's more or less your unincorporated areas are getting smaller and your cities are getting bigger because people are moving back to the cities. So that puts a bigger burden on all of your utilities, all your infrastructures, streets, and everything. So we need, as cities, to keep pushing for state to help fund us with a lot of these projects.
Okay. Any other committee reports? Any unfinished business? New business? Okay, mayor's announcements tonight. Tomorrow, the Special Revenue Debt Services Budget Committee will be meeting at noon here in room 3 at City Hall. That's Johnson, Darrow, and Snyder. And Mark said he was going to try to make that, so anybody else on? Okay. Mm-hmm. And then Wednesday the 9th, the Parks and Rec Budget Committee will be meeting at 6 p.m. in room 3 at City Hall. That's Garcia, Bain, and Darrow. Thinking they'll make it all right? Okay. Thursday, the 10th, the Law Enforcement Budget Committee will be meeting in room 3 of City Hall. That's Johnson, Snyder, and Deaver again. And then Thursday, the 10th, Code Enforcement Budget Meeting will be meeting at 6 in room 3. That's Snyder, Bain, and Deaver. Well, everybody on for that? We're going to be busy. Okay, and then also I am looking for a representative from Council to be on the Hotel Motel Tax Committee. We need a representative from Council, so does anybody like to volunteer for that? That's probably 2, maybe 3 times a year we'll come together. That'll include hopefully a couple of hotel people. I think who else is on that, but I think there's 5 or 6 total, but we need a council member.
Wasn't there a previous committee for that?
Yeah, that's a long, I was on that committee.
Oh, okay.
That's a
you
long time
ago. Okay.
Yeah. Anybody?
I don't know. I could, I guess.
Okay, thank you, Ken.
I keep saying no, but I will.
Okay. Okay, 6.01, executive session for property acquisition. Click on that. Council will now adjourn at 8 o'clock p.m. to go into executive session pursuant to RCW 42.30, .110, parentheses 1, parentheses B, to consider the selection of a site or the acquisition of real estate by purchase or lease. The executive session is expected to last, Terry, how long do you want it? 15 minutes. No action will be taken during the executive session. So, Terry, you're the only one staying or what? Just you. Okay. Everybody else, please leave the room for 15 minutes.